WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Yes, welcome to another edition of Monday Night Talk. We have a fantastic show for you. Of course, it's going to be, we got a couple of segments sandwiched around a political forum. Of course, we got the two Brockton mayoral candidates that are going to be in at the bottom of the hour. Robert Sullivan, Jimmy Pereira, of course, this will be moderated by Christine James. Tail end of the program, Victoria Bond. We can talk about Shirley Valentine, the special show that is coming up later this week. But we kick things off with a good friend of the program that we have had on many times. Actually, I just had him on, I think, a couple of weeks ago, visiting us with a little bit of information. We have Mr. John Mahoney, Plymouth, member of the Plymouth Select Board. I want to make sure I get that correct.
Welcome. That is correct, Kevin, the Plymouth Select Board.
Select Board, not select men. So you visit us with a little bit of news today.
Yeah, no baseball talk tonight, Kevin.
None, zero.
I'm just here to let the audience know that Vinny DiMacedo, the state senator for the Plymouth Barnstable District, has resigned his seat, and I will be competing for the open seat in a few months in a special election.
So before we go into traffic in about a minute and a half here, and then go into a complete conversation with you for a few minutes prior to our forum, what is the district itself, the Plymouth Barnstable State Senate District, what is encompass, and what is your connection to it?
It encompasses six entire communities: Pembroke, Kingston, Plymouth, Bourne, Sandwich, and Falmouth. So the three Cape towns, Kevin. Years ago, I drove a Pepsi route on Cape Cod for 5 to 6 years, and I know the streets of Bourne, Sandwich, and Falmouth like the back of my hand, and certainly, you know, that was 20 years ago, and you go down there now occasionally, not as often as you used to, and some of the landmarks have changed, but I am familiar with those three communities. And I grew up in Pembroke. I spent 30 years in Pembroke. I was born at Jordan Hospital in Plymouth. My parents brought me back to Pembroke. I got out of Silver Lake Regional High School, Pembroke campus in 1985. I ran for a select board in Pembroke in 1988 when I was 20. I came in second out of three. It didn't resonate with me then, but now I wear it as a badge of honor, where I lost to the first woman to get elected to the select board in Pembroke's history in 88, and that was Kathy Barrett. In the 90s, I moved to Plymouth, got elected to town meeting for a couple of years, and then I was appointed to the Finance and Advisory Board, and then I was fortunate enough in 08 to get elected to the select board, and I'm currently in my fourth term on the Plymouth Board of Select Persons.
Excellent. Well, what we're going to do right now is we're going to step aside for a moment. When we come back, we'll chat with John Moore about this announcement as he is running for the soon-to-be-open Plymouth Barnstable State Senate seat, currently being held by Vinny DiMacedo, who is said that he's going to be taking a position with Bridgewater State University shortly.
Hey, it's Jeff, Death from Brennan's. As you all know, I love All Hallows Eve, a.k.a. the Night of Witches, a.k.a. Samhain. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Happy Halloween do you?
Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Okay, we return for our segment with John Mahoney, of course, coming up just in a few moments. Bottom of the hour, political forum with the Brockton mayoral candidates, Jimmy Pereira, Robert Sullivan, of course, being moderated by WATD's Christine James. That coming up in a few moments. But back with now, as we've got announced, John Mahoney, a candidate for the Plymouth, the Plymouth Barnstable State Senate seat. I think probably the first question that would come to mind, other than the district itself and what it encompasses, is what do you feel are going to be the issues of the day, the key issues for this abbreviated term?
Well, I got a question for you, Kevin, before I answer that question.
Okay.
I just want to let you know that last week I called Senator DiMacito.
Yeah.
I gave him a call and just told him what my plans were. I thanked him for his service to the district. When you talk about constituent services, you have an individual there that you really, to eclipse what he has done in his contact and outreach to the community, very difficult to do. He set the bar very high. But I had a question for him. I had Senator DiMacito on the phone and I said, Vinny, what's the biggest difference between you and I? And do you have an answer, Kevin?
The only difference I could think of would be party related, I think.
No, I told him I have a degree from Bridgewater State and he doesn't. I have a business degree. I have a degree in business management from Bridgewater State University, and I cherish it. Back then, I was fortunate to come out of college with a bachelor's degree with no debt. And I asked him on the phone, I said, hey, what's an undergraduate degree go for nowadays? Because back then when I was there, it was $300 to $400 a credit. So times have changed. Now, having said that, when you talk about issues across this district, Kevin, first and foremost, everything should be water security. You saw that last week in Plymouth, we secured a $23 million settlement for a lawsuit that we sued Veolia, the managers of our wastewater treatment plant.
Yep.
And Plymouth is now only the third community in Massachusetts with a redundant pipe when it comes to our sewer line. And if you look down at the Cape, and if you look at the Cape Cod Commission, they're dealing with water and sewer issues down there too. Obviously when the canal was put in, the Cape was made into an island, and the Cape Cod is just a giant sandbar. They have a single source aquifer, and they have to do everything they can to protect that because, you're talking about public safety,
mm-hmm.
public health, and economic development. So,
and if I could kind of weigh in, and you talk about water being relevant as an issue and in the district, let's not discount Pembroke and Kingston and the Silver Lake issue that they're dealing with, whether it's the two Monpont ponds. I only know this because I did an in-depth radio series on this because of the management of that water resource by Brockton and the concerns by the stakeholders that surround Silver Lake. So water is, I think, a key issue.
Oh, absolutely. And it's amazing. If you look at the creation of the Quabbin Reservoir back in the 1930s, you had individuals that went into 4 to 6 communities on behalf of the state of Massachusetts. They created a reservoir. You look at those cranes over the city of Boston today, they were put in place with the creation of the Quabbin Reservoir. They took it 30 to 40 miles west of Boston. They put the reservoir in wooded upland. There's no generators or pumps that are needed. It's gravity fed down into the mm-hmm. city. And then they said, are we going to use a filtration system? Or are we going to put chemicals into the water to, clean it or make it, safe? They don't have to do that because they surrounded the reservoir with 100 to 140 square miles of open space. It is pristine wilderness, and that's what they do. Then you look at Silver Lake, where back in the 40s or the 50s or 60s, when the state legislature gave Brockton complete control over it, you have these numerous watersheds coming in that have been permeated with, now decades later, cesspools, failed septic tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And, it gets into the streams, it gets into the lake.
Cyanobacteria, yep.
Yes. Now, and similar, we have a situation down in Manamet and Whitehorse Beach. And some of the things that the town of Plymouth we've initiated, and I've certainly supported, is we've gone down on the beach and we've used Community Preservation Act money to purchase cottages and take them out of play. Take them out of play. Because what you're effectively doing is you're injecting millions of gallons of untreated human waste into the beach. That's not healthy for anyone.
We just got about a minute or two left here. Were there any other just issues that it just you want to just name the issues per se without giving
well, obviously, anything else? You can see what's going on now with the latest, you know, in the news now.
Pilgrim.
And there was a public hearing, I think, a week ago, Thursday night in Plymouth at South Middle High School was the Army Corps of Engineers. Hey, you've got two pieces of infrastructure.
Oh, the bridges.
That contribute, that basically the entire Cape Cod economy relies on. They were built in 1933 to 1935. You've gotten your 50 years out of them.
Obsolete.
They've come to the end of their lifespan, and now we have to invest. What if that, now they're talking about $1 to $1.5 billion. By the time we get to 2025, you're probably looking at two. You've got to work with your federal delegation. We always got things done in Plymouth with the last two state senators, Terry Murray and Mr. DiMacito, irrespective of political party, because we always put the district and the town first.
Excellent. Real quick, how are things going as far as getting your campaign off the ground and running in a district this size?
We've already got hundreds of volunteers on board. We're starting to raise money. Website is up, www.mahoneyforstatesenate.org. We're going to have three big events prior to December 15th, one on December 12th in Plymouth, one on December 5th we're shooting for in Sandwich. Those two, we're still working on the venues. But the one we already have locked in, and that's Thursday night, November 21st at the Pembroke Country Club from 6 to 8. And I hope everybody in Pembroke, everybody throughout the district, and even if you live in Duxbury, surrounding towns, everybody's more than welcome to show up. So we're going to do a couple of mailers, and obviously the social media, we'll have the Instagram and everything you have to have nowadays. That's why I hire some younger kids for that, Kevin, because... you know, I don't know if Mark Zuckerberg would have done well as my younger brother.
I want to thank you for coming in and kind of making such an announcement. Love to have you back in for a little bit more of a fuller segment. And best of luck. It's going to be interesting knowing that this is going to be a race. You're going to have the primary and the general early next year. We'll find out when that'll all happen. But definitely best of luck. Thank you for coming in today.
Yep, my pleasure, Kevin. It's going to be a four-month sprint. Looking forward to it.
Excellent. Okay, there he is, John Mahoney, a candidate for the Plymouth Barnstable State Senate seat, as we are waiting right now for. The current senator, Vinny DiMacito, to tender his resignation, so to speak, or kind of leave that office. Okay, so what we're going to do now, we will step aside for a few moments, give us enough time to get the candidates in, as we have a political forum on deck in just a few moments. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Please stay tuned.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Over-medicating chronic health issues can be an issue of its own. The time has come for efficient, plant-based remedies formulated specifically for you. Join the millions of other Americans who have found relief thanks to CBD oil. Your CBD store on Route 53 in Hanover has award-winning CBD-based products targeted for use in pain management, anxiety, depression, nausea, insomnia, and seizures. The Farm Bill of 2018 legalized the use of industrialized hemp, making it 100% legal in all 50 states. However, there's a lot of misinformation about CBD. Before you make a decision, you should learn all the facts. There is absolutely no marijuana in products sold by your CBD store of Hanover. Find a better way to treat your chronic conditions. Visit a trusted resource with award-winning products. Your CBD store of Hanover at 1271 Washington Street on Route 53 in Hanover. Your CBD store of Hanover. Help without the high.
All across the South Shore, you'll find the doctors, nurses, and specialists of Brigham Health. We live here, work here, and care here. For over 25 years, we've been providing exceptional primary and multi-specialty care to the communities of the South Shore. This expert, compassionate care is rooted in the clinical excellence and breakthrough research of Brigham and Women's Hospital, one of the nation's best, according to U.S. News & World Report. Visit our newest location in Pembroke, now accepting new patients. BrighamHealth.org/South Shore. Brigham Health, member partners healthcare.
Halloween can be really, really scary. Terrifying, even. It's dark. You're alone on the road. You're being followed. You pick up the pace. You are being followed. Right behind you in the rear view mirror. Big, scary trucks, one right after the other, spewing back crushed stones like rock salt from a scattergun. Big, scary trucks with bumper stickers that boast. And I quote,
"I'm ahead of you."
End of quote. Now that's scary.
My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Invest your time in listening to CAPE Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. CAPE Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And good evening and welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Of course, I'm not Kevin Tachi. I'm Christine James. Welcome to a WATD Political Forum here on Monday Night Talk. And I'm joined by Monday Night Talk host Kevin Tachi and WATD reporter Charles Mathewson. It is a political forum tonight, and the race is for the mayor of Brockton. We've got candidates Robert Sullivan and Jimmy Pereira, both in studio, vying for that post. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
And over there in the corner, the lovely Amy Leonard. She is the woman with the red, green, and yellow pieces of construction paper and timing. That's a very important role here because we try to keep people to stay within the lines. Green means go, red means stop, yellow means you've got 10 seconds, you've got a minute to answer questions. And if you're listening to WATD, you know we always follow the same format. We've asked our candidates to have a 2-minute opening statement prepared to let us know a little bit about what they do, and a 1-minute closing statement. In between, we ask a round of questions, including the famous lightning round, where the reporters will ask either for a 1 or 2 sentence answer or yes or no. Yes or no means yes or no. Doesn't mean yes or no with an explanation. And 1 or 2 sentences means just that. 1 or 2 sentences, not a lot of commas, not a lot of run-on sentences. And if we have time, the candidates will ask each other a question. Now, just moments ago, we chose opening and closing order from the stand-in for the official WATD newsroom koozie, which I still can't find, which I believe was somehow pocketed during our last political season, but I will find that. But we did pick these. Jimmy Pereira will begin, and then Robert Sullivan will make his opening statement, and at the end, we'll reverse that order and go Robert Sullivan and Jimmy Pereira. So welcome to WATD, gentlemen, and let's start with our opening statements for the position of mayor of Brockton. Good evening, Jimmy Pereira.
Good evening, and thank you, everyone. Thank you, WATD, for hosting this event. We have an opportunity on November 5th to make history, to make real change for working people that need government to work with them and not just for them. Like so many others in Brockton, I was born and raised in the city of Champions. I put myself through college while I slept on couches, worked multiple jobs, biked 20 miles to the university every day to make sure I had the skills I needed to represent the community of Brockton. I started a career in public service and have been on the front lines with the people fighting for change in our community on and off election season. I've been preparing for this job in this moment my entire life. Politicians continue to tell us that we need them for change, but I think that is a lie. We are the change we have been waiting for. I stand before you today as someone who's put everything on the lines in hopes of representing our city. Someone who understands what we as Brocktonians go through because I have lived it day in and day out. And I humbly ask for your support on November 5th, to make history, to be a part of something that's bigger than ourselves. We are a few days away from election and are at a pivotal moment in our history. We cannot go backwards, and we have to make that clear on November 5th. We will do this together because change cannot wait another day. As mentioned, I, again, was born and raised in the city of Brockton. I am now a community and transportation planner, working at the Regional Planning Agency, Old Colony Planning Council, working with 17 communities from Avon to Plymouth, Easton to Kingston, Brockton, of course, included, working with the state and the federal government as a liaison between these 17 communities and, again, our government. So having the experience that really counts, and also having the experience that will help bring our city together and move the city forward. Many projects are coming down the line, and again, we want to make sure that we have someone that knows not just the tools, but the best practices and the new innovative way to get there as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement with Jimmy Pereira. Now we go to the opening statement for Robert Sullivan.
Well, thank you, Christine, and I want to thank WATD. The election is 1 week from tomorrow, Tuesday, November 5th, and my slogan is leadership for Brockton's future, and I think that means something. My name is Robert Sullivan, born and raised in Brockton. My wife's from Brockton. We're raising our three children in Brockton. It's home. It's my home, it's your home, and it's our home. And the job of mayor is a serious job, and the experience truly matters. And for 14 years, I've served as a councilor at large, serving the entire city of Brockton, all seven wards, all 28 precincts. I've been the council president four times. I've been acting mayor by virtue of being the president of the council. I have a law degree. I have an MBA degree from Boston College. I've done 14 budgets. I've worked with four different mayors, from Harrington to Belzardi to the late Carpenter to now Mayor Rodriguez. I believe that I have the skills, the leadership, and the experience on day one to be an effective, proactive, inclusive mayor. And that's what's needed. We need to elect someone to be the voice of the people, all the people. And I believe that experience truly, truly matters for this job. I have a great family background in the city of Brockton, but I've done budgeting, I've done financial accounting, I've done legal ordinance drafting. And at the end of the day, I've been endorsed by the Brockton firefighters, the Brockton police, Brockton building trades, and the city employees. And I truly, truly am asking people on November 5th to go to the polls. I'm gonna be number two on the ballot. My name is Robert Sullivan. I'm one of you, and I want to work with you, but more importantly, work for you. I've done it for 14 years as a legislator, as a city councilor. Now I want to take it to the administrator role, and it is a serious job. It's the CEO of a business known as Brockton, $440 million business. So I'm humbly asking for your vote, number two on the ballot, but always number one for the City of Champions, the City of Brockton, Mass. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was Robert Sullivan with his opening comment. Now we're going to go to questions. Let's go to Monday Night Talk host Kevin Tachi. Questions for the candidates.
Thank you, Christine. We'll start with you, Council President. Many are looking forward to a new administration and what it will bring. However, some feel that your administration might not be all that different from what the city has seen in previous years. How do you respond to such criticism?
Well, I mean, Brockton has always been a city of immigrants. My grandparents came from Ireland to work in the factories. It's just a different wave of beautiful immigrants now. And, it needs to reflect. Any administration, if I'm fortunate enough to become the mayor of the city of Brockton, it's going to be all-inclusive. It's a team effort. It doesn't matter, what your age is, what your color is, what your religious background, your sex orientation. If you live in Brockton, you're a Brocktonian. I've always worked for 14 years. I've been reelected seven times, Kevin. The last 10 years, I've topped the ticket. It's across the board of people in Brockton, young and old, white and black. It doesn't matter. My administration, if I'm fortunate enough to become mayor, is going to reflect the people of Brockton. Multiple languages, multiple diversity. That's what's so beautiful about the City of Champions, the City of Brockton. So, I can't talk about other administrations. All I know is if I am fortunate enough to be elected mayor, change is coming, change is needed, positive change to benefit everybody that lives and works in the city of Brockton. Thank you.
Mr. Pereira, critics applaud your youthful tenacity, but question your lack of municipal experience, especially when it comes to budgets in the area of finance. How do you counter such comments?
Several ways, actually. So knowing that as if elected, that I'm not going in by myself, I will obviously have a strong team that also has the assets that I may not have. And that's what it's about, bringing people together, is making sure that you look at each other's skills and make sure that you have the right people at the table. I have a few of those people there with me now at the campaign office who have helped with some savings plan and helped me articulate some of my ideas as well. But also with my experience at the Old Colony Planning Council. We have different budgets that we work with. The state and the federal government allocates dollars to us. We have to make sure that we disseminate these dollars to these communities, but also make sure that we are staying within the guidelines and our means when we're looking at spending time on these projects as well. We look at also making sure that when transportation projects come in, We provide a voice for the region at the JTC, which is the Joint Transportation Committee meeting. And through those processes, we're able to budget and make sure that we're looking at how these dollars will get to these communities and make sure that we're affecting the issues that continue to plague the communities, such as high crash intersections.
Okay. Questions for the candidates? Charles Mathewson?
To continue on a theme, let's talk about the fairgrounds. You've both object to a casino going in there, but I am unfortunately old enough to remember when there were ethnic cottages in the fairgrounds. There was Lithuanian, Irish, Italian. Today there should probably be a Cape Verdean and Haitian cottage if that tradition were to continue. So how is the city doing with the new immigrants, and how could it be improved? Robert.
Well, I mean, I think we can always improve, and we need to improve, and we need to do it together, and that's why I'm running for mayor. You know, people have said to me, you know, you have a young family, Bob, you know, why are you going to do this? And I said, because we need to. We need to have the right people at City Hall to be the voice of the people. And that's all inclusive, Charlie. As I said before, Brockton has always been a home of immigrants. That's what makes the fabric of the city of Brockton. You know, we need to do better. There's been issues in the past that I realize and I recognize. Bad things have happened, and barriers have been put up. And in order to move forward together, those barriers need to go. And they need to go January 6th when the next mayor is sworn in. So all I can say to you, Charlie, is I'm from Brockton. I have great, great friends and supporters from the days I went to Brockton High and beyond. And 14 years as a city councilor at large serving the entire city has created such an eye-opening experience, wonderful people throughout the city of Brockton. But I will tell you this, we, meaning all Brocktonians, need to have the right people in place from the city council to the school committee to the mayor of Brockton. That's why I'm running, Charlie.
Jimmy, how are we doing?
Not so good. We have a few discrimination lawsuits. We actually have, you know, being a planner, you really get, you know, integrated into the community. So we have a lot of things that were happening actually with tensions between community members. I was born here, first generation American. Growing up, there was issues where you have someone that may migrate from Cape Verde and a native born will have tension with them because they feel they may be superior. Something actually happened recently to that not too long ago with a group of children that were actually having an altercation with another smaller group of children where there was a sense of hostility that, you know, we belong here and you don't, and you don't know the language. So there's a lot of things. And what I want to do is bring people together, help educate, and make sure that we have collaboration, cultural collaboration, but also make sure that we're implementing guidelines that the state and the federal government has provided for us. So one in particular is the Title VI guideline, which says that if you have a community or a population that has limited English proficiency, you have to make sure that you're providing translative and interpretive services to those community members. So those are one of the things that we want to make sure we take care.
Okay.
Thank you.
And continuing on that theme about the city's minority population, what do you think the relationship is like between Brockton Police and the city's minority population? Do you think it's adequate? Let's start with you, Jimmy.
I think it's growing. There are more police officers that have a second language ability, but I think it's more than that. Cultural competency is not something that's just limited to someone of a different skin color. We want to make sure that if you're already there, you get acquainted with the community members, and also the community members get acquainted with you, because we want everyone to be respected. When I see a young child, whether they are Cape Verdean descent, Irish descent, or Italian descent, I want to make sure that they know who I am and that I know who they are as well. Respect their culture, and they educate themselves, or we educate each other on our cultures as well. We need stronger community engagement with police officers. There's different best practices utilized in different communities, and that's what we do as planners. That's what I will hopefully be able to do as if elected as mayor as well, is make sure that we collaborate, educate, and encourage stronger connections. There's a design that I want to implement, which is working with the neighborhood associations, working with police officers, and working with the community members to have a bridge with our government.
Okay. Same question, Bob Sullivan. The relationship between Brockton Police and the city's minority population, is it adequate?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think any relationship could be built upon. And if I'm elected mayor, we need to establish a collaborative community approach, trust between the residents of the city of Brockton and the police. Listen, I don't have it in my fabric to be a police officer, but there's brave men and women that serve Brockton every single day, putting their lives on the line. But can we do better as a relationship building? Absolutely. Does it start with the mayor? Absolutely. So, you know, I think we need to get back to the basics. When I grew up in Brockton, there was community policing, there was walking beats. You know, the neighborhood watch program needs to be more synergy, more building upon that. You know, it's getting out of the cruises and talking to the residents, walking around, not just downtown Brockton, but throughout, you know, north, south, east, west in the city of Brockton. So, you know, I think it's a learning process. It's not going to happen overnight, Christine, but it needs to happen. It's vitally important. And that goes for everybody in the city of Brockton, you know, and it also goes for the fire department. Anybody that serves at City Hall or public service or DPW, there has to be that relationship building. And it's going to be a work in progress. But again, the mayor, being the CEO of the business known as Brockton, has to facilitate that.
Okay, I want to ask you each a quick follow-up question while we're on that topic. The Russell Lopes lawsuit. How do you think it's being handled? Would you handle it differently, Bob Sullivan?
Well, I mean, I said this the other night. It's a pending matter, and I am a lawyer. And what I will say is discrimination in any form is unjust, and it's harmful. And has there been discrimination in the city of Brockton? Absolutely. But I'm trained in the law. I went to New England School of Law, and I'm bar certified in Massachusetts. What we're always taught in law school is to try to sit down and work it out. I have a skill set in the art of negotiation, art of compromise. So, you know, I know Mayor Rodriguez right now is working to, you know, sit the parties down. But I really think it's a learning process right now. We've learned from mistakes. Those mistakes can never happen again. And whoever is elected mayor, Jimmy or myself, needs to reiterate that. There has to be a cultural change at City Hall, but we also have to address issues that are on the docket right now, Christine. And as a lawyer, I could do that on day one.
Okay. Same question, Jimmy Pereira. What do you think about the Russell Lopes lawsuit, about how it's being handled? What would you do?
I think... You know, I don't try not to pass blame or point fingers at anybody, but it could have been handled a long time ago. That's why I ran in 2017 against the late Mayor Carpenter. And now that we're here at this crossroad, I know that our best solution was to make sure to resolve the situation and also to make sure that it doesn't repeat itself. So it's not just looking at the lawsuit, but also implementing best practices to avoid this. What we want to look at, the Pereira administration, if elected, would look at implementing a citizens advisory committee, which would look at hiring and firing or reprimandation practices and leaving and also applying transparency for the government and the community members as well. We also want to make sure that we're engaging with cultural competency and also making sure that people are aware of their rights, but also to make sure that government is aware of what should be done and should not be done. Being trained as a planner, we make sure to look at, again, different policies and how when you implement these policies, they are there for a long time, other than being revised and amended. So that's why I always say measure twice, cut once, because once you put it in there, you'll have situations that will affect many people from
time
to come.
Thank you very much. You're listening to a political forum here. It is for mayor for the city of Brockton. We've got Jimmy Pereira, who you just heard, and Robert Sullivan, both candidates. Going to go to a next question now with Monday Night Talk host Kevin Tachi.
Jimmy, you referenced that clash which was between a group of youth, but then also members of the Brockton Police Department were videotaped getting involved, trying to break it up, and we actually did it. There's video footage of a police officer getting involved with one of the youth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while their officials have said that the ongoing issue was amongst teens, there were questions by folks in the community asking, you know, what's being done in regards to the police and their commitment to the community. Mm-hmm. Are you satisfied with the department's command staff and method of policing, or would you consider change, such as a new police chief, or even bringing in the Collins Center to assess the operations?
I would look at change. I wouldn't do it so hastily. I'd like to make sure we look at, observe, and I mean, some of it has already been observed, but there is better practices that we can implement in the police force, but also making sure that there's a stronger integration between community members as well. I believe when you have a stronger sense, a stronger relationship between community members, you have a stronger sense of respect and a stronger sense of communication between each other. We need not just more police officers, but we need to make sure that we're educating police officers about what's going on in the community, the diverse community. We have a big mental health issue as well that's been developing, continues to develop. Not too long ago, we had an incident where a person that, you know, wasn't really mentally stable walked into a business. He got pretty irate because of the return policy and pulled out a hatchet. I actually know the business owner, and I was able to actually witness the aftermath as well. And I know that, again, not too far, this was on Pleasant Street and Main Street, about a stone throws away, you have what's called Needle Park. So a lot needs to be done in making sure sure that we educate our police officers, but also educate our community members on what it takes to be a police officer and what our community members are facing with as well.
Council President, same question to you, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Kevin, at the end of the day, whoever's elected mayor, and I hope it's me, I mean, you set the tone, and we have to set standards for individual and collective behavior and supporting, you know, educational training about those standards. So, you know, if I am fortunate enough to be elected mayor, the mayor is the CEO, as I've said, of a business, and we have to decide who is going to be department heads, and one of those would be like the police chief, as you said. And I will say this, if I'm elected mayor, I'm going to foster an environment based on openness and inclusiveness. It has to happen. We have to implement diversity, inclusive training, and initiatives for city employees across the board, City Hall and outside of City Hall. But I think, you know, you first of all, you don't jump anything hastily. Number one thing is the voters decide who they're going to elect a mayor. The mayor comes in, does an analysis, does due diligence, decides personnel matters. You want skillful, experienced, respected individuals to serve in those capacities. And that's how I would govern. You know, that's the way it needs to happen, to do it the right way, Kevin. And that's what I would do if I'm elected mayor.
Quick follow-up, and that is staying on the police thing. Public safety campus, would you be for a new police department? Would that maybe motivate morale in the police department, Robert?
Yeah, I mean, I've already voted on that. We've already done the 250,000 feasibility study. It has to happen for communications, for morale, and also to get up to technology. It's an outdated dinosaur right now. It's not a healthy environment for the morale of the men and women, and also it's not really civic friendly for people that need to go to the police department.
Would you want a police department or would you want a public safety campus?
I think,
campus?
Quite honestly, my favorite would be try to do a public safety where you would have joint police and fire. I think you need to look at the dollar amounts to do an analysis on that, Kevin. I thought 123 Fairgrounds, Charlie talked about it earlier, I think that'd be a great location right on Belmont Street. But we have, the city council has already appropriated money for a feasibility study. We need to figure out where is the right location, but that's what I would favor.
Same question, Jimmy.
I would prefer a public safety complex. I'd also look at expanding that and looking at substations as well, kind of delving out to other sides of the city. We'd also look at a public safety complex that would be at nearby the what I want to say is the wraparound, the holistic around approach for the homeless shelter. So right now you have what's Main Spring on the corner of Spring Street and Main. At 7 a.m. You get kicked out, 4 p.m. you come back in. So that stretch of the day you're out and about in the streets of Brockton. So accompanied by the public safety complex, you would have a housing first initiative would be an apartment where you have a secure place to live. Next door would be a cafeteria area where you wouldn't just be fed, but you'd also learn about how to feed yourself. I believe if you give a man a fish or a woman a fish, you feed them for a day, teach them how to fish, feed them for a lifetime. The final part of that campus would be the workshop area where you would be educated on workforce development, mental health assistance, and substance abuse assistance as well. There's different ways that we could look at allocating funds for that. It would be working with the nonprofits as well, and again, looking at a conglomerative approach. Thank you.
Just made it.
There you go.
Charles Matthewson, questions for the candidates.
My question is, do you think it's time to begin to cooperate with the towns of Kingston, Pembroke, Halifax, Sanson, Plimpton? Bob is shaking his head. Yes, he knows where I'm going with this. In the 90s, Brockton was known as the most progressive city in the country. Unfortunately, it was the 1890s, not the 1990s.
Before my time, yes.
You know, the first electric fire station, the first electric theater, Edison was busy downtown. And what also happened then was the socialist mayor promised to deprivatize the water system. And it's been like that since. In the 1890s, the residents of the Silver Lake towns did not have much political power. They do now, and they're a little upset with the city of Brockton. So do you think this is a time to restart the relationship with the Silver Lake towns? Let's start with Robert.
So I'm actually the vice chairman of the Plymouth County Advisory Board. For the last 10 years, last decade, I'm Brockton representative. Mayor Harrington put me on. You know, in terms of being a public servant, you always, Charlie, always want to open up communications with neighboring communities. That's how you govern. The art of democracy and diplomacy, the art of compromise. So it would be really foolish not to sit down with the town managers, town administrators, town councilors, board of selectmen, and open up conversation and dialogue. Not promises made, but sharing of ideas, criticisms, suggestions to try to figure out how we are going to take the next step. Water is the number one resource right now, and we need to maintain that, but we also have to maintain our relationships. And being on the Plymouth County Advisory Board, there are some wonderful people throughout the county, and again, I think it would be short-sighted and foolish not to open up communications across the board on everything. Could be a collaborative approach to buy, you know, fire trucks. I mean, there's a lot of different things. The issue you talked about is long overdue, and we should open up discussions. Why not? Talk is cheap. It's production that really matters.
Jimmy, I've seen this guy in Kingston and Plymouth. What do you think?
Being at the planning agency, we work with these communities that you've mentioned, and we've looked at the analysis, we've looked at the studies as well. And I do remember the situation in Silver Lake where the bacteria and everything started to constrain, and you have to look at those things. And I've been working at the regional planning agency for over half a decade, but I've been a planner and environmental scientist ever since getting out of college, Westfield State University. There we focused on, actually a project I worked on was the Westfield watershed. We have the Taunton River watershed here. There's other opportunities for us to look at opening up the Avenue 4 water resource. I would like to look at a water and sewer commission, also looking at other options as well to make sure that, as mentioned, and I've mentioned this before, water is the next gold, and we need to make sure that we are working with our neighbors and making sure that we're not depleting just that resource, but also making sure we're opening the doors for other avenues as well too, and regionalizing it would be great as well. And I think in the Silver Lake as well would be a sub-region that we would be able to work with also.
I have a follow-up.
Okay.
You going desal, or you going?
I'll leave desal to you.
Okay.
The condition of the ponds in Silver Lake and the Monponset ponds is deteriorating.
Yes.
There's cyanobacteria in Monponset Pond. It's drifting into Silver Lake, and it's getting into the Brockton water supply. The quantity and quality of Brockton water is threatened. Yep. Would you consider MWRA, for instance, as a partial solution? Robert.
So I filed a resolve with my colleague, Councilor Large Winthrop Fowler, to do just that. We had the MWRA come before the City Council. The connection would be originally thought to be on the Stoughton-Brockton line, Charlie, but the piping is too small to facilitate that. So what they told us, it would be really cost prohibitive at this time, is to go all the way to Blue Hills, try to pipe it right down Route 24. Just didn't make sense at that time. But again, if you're elected mayor, you need to work with the delegation, the state rep, state senator, and the local body, which is the City Council, to kind of come up with some solutions. So I wouldn't rule anything out. I think everything's on the table. I think you have to do a cost analysis and figure out from a time perspective what can be generated timely, what's going to be cost prohibitive versus within the realm and the budget. And again, that's why I believe I'm running for mayor. Experience matters, and I have these skills, and I've done these things. And you know, you really have to look at everything to be an effective leader.
The pipes are in the ground to Abington. And Abington is part of the former Naval Air Station, and they're getting in MWRA. That's another.
Rockland, right.
Jimmy, what do you think about?
I think it is an option. I know it is expensive, but you don't rule anything out. But also, again, making sure that you're looking at the feasibility study, see how much it's going to cost. And that's why I always, again, look at the different options. Working with the Regional Planning Agency, we have looked at regionalizing our efforts. It would be a lot better for us to regionalize it, because it wouldn't be so much of a cost to all the community members if we went in it together. But we want to make sure that everyone is on board with it, because right now, when you look at the desalination plan, you look at the Silver Lake City, there's a lot of constraint, and there's a lot of miscommunication as well. So with the greater Brockton region and my skills as a planner who brings all the stakeholders to the table, who I have been doing for over half a decade, we want to make sure that we're talking to our neighbors, bringing them to the table, see what they think about our ideas and our plans, and make sure that we go in together.
You're listening to 95.9 FM in Marshfield, WATD, the South Shore's news and information station. It is a Brockton political forum. The race is for mayor. We've got Jimmy Pereira and Robert Sullivan here.
While we're still on the topic of water.
Did you want to go to water?
I just want to just stay on just for half a second.
Okay.
And Charlie talked about the MWRA as a hookup and a possibility. But let's not forget that the city of Brockton still has a desalination plant. I think you're under contract for another 10 years. I know that the current mayor has kind of renegotiated. The city council is probably up for another vote, a final vote.
We just voted on it the other day.
Okay. So what do you do about the deed? Would your administration consider buying the desalination plant? I'll start with Jimmy. Jimmy, would your administration consider purchasing this?
We would facility? Be open to purchasing, not at that price. I would like to look at, again, regionalizing it with Brockton being the major stakeholder. And we would look at how we would be able to go into a purchase, whether it is take on a debt with communities or incentivize funding it through monetary means. But making sure that we have alternative sources. Once you have the desalinization plant, you have to make sure, again, you still have to have two sources. And if Silver Lake tragedy happened at Silver Lake, then we have to, again, make sure that we have adequate water available in case of emergency. I never like to limit myself. As a planner, we always look at the multi-pronged approach or the multifaceted approach. There's other systems that I want to implement, or because these are things that, you know, again, I've been educated on, a gray water system. So with every new building that we put into place in the city of Brockton, we want to make sure that it has gray water capability and other ways to encourage a preservation of water.
But would a purchase be contingent on that it could actually pump the capacity it says, or even expand beyond that?
Exactly, and there's a lot of other situations, technical situations that go along with the infrastructure there, like the membranes and all the other things that go along with that we'd have to look at. But also knowing that with the expansion of South Coast Rail, there's going to be an impediment on the pipes, so we have to make sure that we work with the state to say who's going to pay for it. And again, when you work with government, there's a lot of finger pointing in different directions and lack of accountability. So the next mayor has to make sure that they know who's at the table and make sure that they're informed about the issues as well.
Council President, same question. Would your administration consider purchasing the desal plant?
Well, first of all, just to inform people, the state mandated that Brockton have a secondary water source, and that's how really Aquaria was born. As a city councilor for the last 14 years, I've actually sought through resolutions and resolves and orders to have the principal players, the owners, come before us to give us status updates. I was adamantly opposed to the proposed $78 million. It was over fair market. It was way out of whack. But I will say a week ago, through the efforts of Mayor Rodriguez, the city council voted to amend it. And we're going to get no-cost water. Price reduction, it's going to be almost an annual savings of $744,000 per year. That's a good thing for the residents, the taxpayers, the constituents. But I wouldn't discount anything, Kevin. I think if you can get the players at the table and you can acquire something for fair market value, get it within the dollar amount, do a municipal bond, maybe amortize it over 20 years. But the key thing is to pay the right price and also secure municipal communities to be customers. That's the key. Right now, the only customer is the city of Brockton. So, you know, we have another 7 years on this contract, but I think at the end of the day, Kevin, it'd be short-sighted not to explore all options on that.
Thank you. I got that bell
in. Gotcha.
Okay. I'm just going to jump ahead here now. This is going to be a quick two-part question. One, we're hearing a lot of major issues in general about the city of Brockton. To the average Brockton voter, what difference is it going to make if you're elected and in office? Jimmy?
Thank you. It'll make, in my opinion, a major difference, especially knowing my upbringing, knowing the communities I grew up in, a lot of the tough neighborhoods in the city of Brockton, and whether it be the north side, east side, or the south side. And we know now that violence and drugs and the issues we see now don't just stay in the inner core. It spreads out to your outskirts and your neighboring communities as well, especially when you're looking at guns and violence also. So we want to make sure that we're looking at public safety, but we also want to make sure that we are marketing the city in a better light, because it's not every day that you have guns and violence. There are happy moments in the city of Brockton. There are thriving moments in the city of Brockton. We have about $600 million of expansion coming down the South Coast Rail. It's going to open up more avenues for TOD, transit-oriented development, and also economic growth and development as well. We need someone that has the mind and capacity and the experience to move that forward, but also the mind and the capacity and the experience to bring people together, inform our community, and make sure that we're putting this city not just in the 21st century, but the 22nd century and beyond.
Thank you very much. That was Jimmy Pereira. Same question, Robert Sullivan. What difference is it going to make to the average voter if you're in the mayor's seat?
Well, absolutely, it will make the biggest difference of their lives. I mean, we need a safer city, a cleaner city, an economic thriving city, a city for all. an inclusive city. We need to make sure that our public school children are being treated fairly, making sure that the classroom sizes are reduced, making sure that the 30 to 35 kids in a classroom, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't help the boys and girls, doesn't help the teachers. So again, the mayor is also the chairman of the school committee in the city of Brockton, also chairman of the board of the Bat Bus in Brockton. So there's a lot that people will realize if I'm elected mayor, because again, I've done it for 14 years. I have the skill sets. I have a government background from Boston College. I have a law degree from New England School of Law. I have a business degree. But at the end of the day, it's the mayor's budget. So you have to work within the budget, but you have to work with all departments to make it beneficial for everybody that lives or works in the city of Brockton, Christine. So it's a very, very important election coming up a week from tomorrow. And again, I'm hoping people will go onto my website, electrobertsullivan.com, and look at what I believe in and what my stances are and what my productions is. Thank you.
And I just want to ask you a quick question. This has been an issue here in the past. When Bill Carpenter first got elected, the first time around, he was pretty anxious to come into WATD and do a political debate here in our studios. After he got elected, it was like pulling teeth. Mm-hmm. I'm not speaking ill of the dead. It just seems with a lot of people, when they get into office, it's very, very difficult to get them to commit to come back, debate live here on WATD. So I'm asking you both tonight, whichever one of you gets elected in office, will you come back in 2 years and debate for the seat? Bob Sullivan.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I enjoy it.
Yes. Okay, same with you, Jimmy Pereira.
Without a doubt.
All right, good. It's all recorded.
You do realize this is going to be on her ring...
My ringtone.
Her ringtone.
Right? Okay.
So remember when you said...
Right. Too funny.
Mr. Tachi, question?
Yes. 90% of the city budget is related to wages and benefits. Union contracts will be expiring, and you, as mayor, will be called upon to direct negotiations with employee groups. What experience do you have with collective bargaining, and what percent increase in wages do you foresee for new contracts? Counselor.
Kevin, I've been the town attorney for the town of Randolph from 2009 to 2014. I sat at the table with the town manager, Dave Murphy, and I negotiated on behalf of the town. I have that skill set. Being a lawyer, I've done contracting work. I do contracting work right now for Comcast. So again, you know, these unions that are coming up and these contracts are about to expire, I'd be able to hit the ground running on that effectively, working with the other people, the city solicitor, personnel director Sandra Knight, to make a difference. You know, in terms of percentage, again, I have to win the election first. That's the only thing I'm focused on. And then you get in there, you look at the contracts, you do your due diligence, you look at comparisons of other contracts that are in the city of Brockton. But without question, I would be able to handle that task. I've already done it, and I would look forward to the challenge, Kevin.
Jimmy, same question.
Great. So the experience that I have, even though limited, we know that working with contract bargaining, it's not just the mayor's job. You have a team that handles a lot of that for you as well, too. And also, again, having a team that comes in with you to help with the issues that you will be mandated to work with. I worked with Commonwealth Corporation, which is a nonprofit quasi-organization. It's both public and privately funded. We disseminated funds to programs, so we're working with at-risk youth and also working with clean energy as well. So there, of course, there's bargaining that goes along with that. I also have been endorsed by SEIU 1159 and 1132 BJ, and also was a worker with the unions as well, too. So knowing that it's not just at the table, but at the picket line as well, to make sure that we're looking at livable wages, that we're looking at making sure that everything is adequate for our workforce as well. So it's not just what you see on paper, but what is actually happening into the work field or workforce as well, and on the job site also. So making sure everyone's following OSHA regulations, and again, making sure our medical and pay leave is at the table as well. So again, that's what I want to do, and we'll do it if elected. Thank you,
Frank. Good, I got you both.
Beat me, yeah, exactly.
Now let's go to Charles Matthews and questions today.
Guys, my mother was a high school friend of Barbara Marciano, before she was obviously Barbara Marciano. And when I was a very young child, I have to emphasize, very young child, I met Rocky once on Main Street, and I was impressed with the size of his hands and how well-dressed he was. And looking around, everyone on Main Street that Saturday afternoon was well-dressed, going into Rahm's and Gilchrist's and Edgar's.
Kresge's.
It was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You don't see that today. You see the district court.
Mm-hmm.
There's overshadowing everything else on Main Street. Every mayor for the last what, 30 years has said we're going to bring Main Street back. No one has done it. What are your plans, Jimmy?
If elected, we will do it. How we will do it? By making sure that I utilize my skills, not just as a planner, but also as a Brocktonian, knowing that the culture and the diversity and also what the people want. We need to look at placemaking, so we need to make sure that two-way Main Street is a possibility, but we need the political willpower and the drive to push it forward. And I have the experience and also the relationship with the state delegation, also with the regional planning agency, and even locally with our department has to know that we have to articulate the plan, implement the plan, and make sure that it expands as well, too, not just to downtown, but the network and also the other economic sectors in the city of Brockton. We want to look at the vacant lots that you have there now. Recently, we had an event named Prava. It was at two separate locations. You had one at the Kresge lot. Neighbor Works is implementing a project there. We have that second lot, which is between the old Neighborhood Health Center and Marion's. We want to look at maybe putting a park there, maybe a playground or something where children and mothers who are going to the library or who have a full day can go and experience a good time in downtown.
Mr. Sullivan.
No, Charlie, my parents met at the Center Theater downtown. One of my grandmothers worked at Gilchrist. My other grandmother ran Fannie Farmers downtown. One thing that I can say is, as a city councilor for 14 years, I've been pro-business. I've thought outside the box. Chapter 40R, smart growth zoning. I brought it before the council. It got adopted, and you know what? It was a catalyst for investment. That's why $30 million was invested downtown, Trinity Financial. That's why Vincente's did their natural expansion to the old style market on Warren Avenue and Pleasant Street. There's a lot of tools in the toolbox where we can do investment. Mayor Bill Carpenter had a great relationship with the governor and lieutenant governor. I was with lieutenant governor the other day, 75 Commercial Street. It's a building that's going to be, it has been rehabbed. So, you know, we can look at historic tax credits. We can look at the commuter rail, transit-oriented, the DRIP program, the TIF program, the TIE program. There's a lot that we can do, but at the end of the day, the voters need to elect someone that has the experience, the skill set, and the knowledge to make it happen. Talk is cheap. You're right. Two-way traffic. I've been on the council 14 years. They've been talking about it since then. Senator Brady had some money appropriated to get it done. Either you do it or you don't do it. But we need to make sure that downtown and throughout the city is developed and investment comes to Brockton.
Almost got dinged.
Just want to mention that both candidates here are very well dressed tonight as well.
Thank you.
All right. My question. Let's get right to it. Who are your top five donors, Bob Sullivan?
My top five donors?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the maximum OCPF now is $1,000. So I've gotten $1,000 from certain people. I could tell you some people, the Stadelman family, who have known me since the first grade, have given it to me. A lot of unions have maxed out.
Mm-hmm.
I've been endorsed by, 15 or 20 different unions.
Okay.
My wife gave me $100. But, you know, again, you can look it up. It's a matter
only
of record.
100?
Well, this gives me all the support. But I mean, OCPF, if anybody wants to look up any of my donors, OCPF, it's okay. An open public record. And again, the hardest thing to do, Christine, when we run for office, to ask someone for a donation. Mm-hmm. But it's a necessary evil. I've had great supporters, time and money. And ultimately, we're running a positive, effective, issue-driven campaign. And I'm very proud of it.
Okay. So during this positive and issue-driven campaign, Jamie Pereira, who are your top five donors?
So for me, it's not just, you know, about how much, but why these people are donating to me. I have the most donors, basically local donations, and the average donation is about $86. So we are really the people's campaign. We're working for those that, you know, felt like they haven't had a voice in the city of Brockton. We do have some good donors that, you know, donors that have a good amount of money as well, but not as much as the people. And mm-hmm. That's who we're fighting for, is the people. So my top five are, again, the people of Brockton, the people of Brockton. So I'll name a few.
Yes.
Julia Pimento is one who's a strong volunteer for mine as well, too. Gerson Montero, who's a teacher in the city of Brockton that is desperate to see change in the school system. We have another teacher, Katia Alfonso, who works in the special education department with the students there, and again, has said that there's definitely change needed there. And two more that I would think of, Neil Siskin, you know, you have to see OCPF, and we'll leave that there. But another person would be my mother. For certain. She has been there since day one and has supported.
Okay.
Fiance hasn't donated
that's
yet. She doesn't have too much money. So
yeah. Just remind folks, you're listening to a WATD political forum here. It's the race for mayor of Brockton. Jimmy Pereira and Robert Sullivan, both candidates, are here. Now let's go back to Kevin Tachi. A question for the candidates here.
I want to know who your 15th
donor is. No.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Homelessness is an issue that a lot of communities are experiencing, especially a community the size of Brockton, mm-hmm. Where individuals will go to the city seeking social services. They'll flock to the Mainspring House. And as it was, we were discussing earlier, you had mentioned when we talked about the police station, you had mentioned something in regards to having something to help those folks mm-hmm. who have a need for alternative housing. Mm-hmm. Do you have a plan to deal with the issue of homelessness to finally solve it? I know it's been something that's been
yes.
mentioned by previous administrations.
Right. So through my efforts and experience at the Regional Planning Agency and as a community advocate and activist, we look at the wraparound approach. We look at, and knowing that it's not just the wraparound, but the problem solution oriented approach. We know there are multiple problems when you look at homeless. No one chooses to be homeless, and we actually look at people without homes rather than call them homelessness or homeless. So we want to look at, again, the wraparound approach where we have the campus style, where you have a housing first initiative. It's secured, monitored, clean, and you have a secure place to put your belongings and have a peace of mind. Right now, when you get pushed out of the shelter, you go for a job interview, you have to bring your trash bag of clothes with you. You don't have a peace of mind there. With the workshop area, again, you'd have opportunity to not just receive assistance on medical assistance and mental assistance, but also workforce readiness and job preparedness. There's a lot of organizations that I have worked with in the community that are looking at job placement also. So looking at, again, making sure that we get all our ducks in a row, look at different approaches for different issues, because there's a lot of issues that we have, and making sure, again, that we tackle it and bring do a conglomerate approach.
Quick 30-second follow-up, and that is this a problem that's too big and complex for the city, and do you feel the city needs to partner up with Brockton?
I believe the city needs to partner up with the region and the state as well, too, because it's not just a Brockton problem. When I talk to police officers, they say before, you would be, even with the homeless people, you would know who the homeless people are. I myself knew who some of the homeless people were because I'd see them walking down up my street for the years. But now it's become cumbersome when you have an entrenchment of people coming from the region, from different parts of the state, and even different parts of the country as well. So we cannot do it alone, and we need someone that's going to, again, bring all the stakeholders to the table. And as a planner, I've been able to do that. And if elected as mayor, I will continue to do that. Thank you.
Robert, so it's a two-part question, but the first part is what's your plan to deal with this issue, folks who need housing, permanent housing?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin, homelessness has risen dramatically in the past decade, and it's a regional problem, and Brockton has a disproportionate share of it, I think, because of the supportive services located in the city. But listen, there's not a man or woman alive that wants to live on the streets. There's a reason why the idea of having a roof over your head, and there's factors on what's happening: drug, alcohol, domestic abuse, mental health illness. Perhaps they lost a house in the epidemic of the foreclosure. But at the end of the day, what we need to do as elected officials is to have a compassionate approach. You know, create a collaborative approach with local social services, resources that are needed to address homelessness. You know, we need to have wraparound services, like Jimmy said, but more supportive housing, and we have that in Brockton. We have Jack's Place, we have Montello too in the city of Brockton. We need to also make sure that the champion plan that the late Mayor Bill Carpenter enacted is enhanced. It makes a difference, and we need to address it, and the elected officials are the ones that need to work. The state reps, the state senator, the mayor, the city council, we have to address this issue.
Super brief and quick, but is this a problem that's too big and complex for the city to handle?
I don't think it is. I think we have, three medical facilities in the city of Brockton. We have great, like BAMSI, we have great social service agency, and we have great people. That's the number one asset, Kevin, in Brockton, is its people. It is a serious issue. It's a complex issue. It can't be addressed overnight, but with a collaborative approach, and also reaching out to other neighboring communities. We just had one at the War Memorial recently, Kevin, but it needs to be addressed because people are dying and living on the streets, and it's just not a compassionate thing to do.
Question for the candidates, Charles Mathewson.
I talked about the glory days of Brockton more than 100 years ago. Do you aspire to have a great city again, or are you just trying to keep above water, Robert?
I'm from Brockton. I'm a Brockton guy. My wife's from Brockton. We didn't leave Brockton. We came here, and we came back after we graduated. It's home. I've said it before, and we're raising three kids, 12, 9, and 7. I want it to be the best possible city in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, A number one. The City of Champions is their slogan. It needs to happen. You can only do that collaboratively, but electing the right people, Charlie. It's my home. I want it to be a safe home, clean home, but it has to be economic thriving. We need investment to increase our tax base to help all the residents. And also, the mom and pops that are here, we don't want to lose them. We want to attract new businesses, but also maintain businesses that are here. When Sorelli Foods left Brockton to go down to Middleborough, it was over like $100,000. It was silly that we lost that business. So I want it to be the best possible city, not for me and my wife, and not for Jimmy and his fiancée, but for the next generation, our children. That's what it's about to serve.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy.
Yes, I want it to be a thriving city. This is what I've been waiting and living for, growing up and again in a lot of the disenfranchised communities and being able to actually go into the foster care system in a different community against my will, but having the drive and the intention to come back to the city of Brockton, which I was able to do after working for the city of Springfield as a healthy design coordinator. So what I will do if elected, and I like to give tangible items, is making sure that we market the city. Right now, when you drive into the city of Brockton, there's no wayfinding. How do you get to downtown? How do you get to the Camp Hillo neighborhood? We need to make sure that the narrative changes, because when you go out of Brockton, that's the story. Brockton is downtrodden. It's ridden with violence. So we need to change that, but we also need to make sure that we're changing the infrastructure as well to make sure that we are going to revitalize the city. And again, not just downtown, but the other economic sectors. I want to create a neighborhood association to give identity to those neighborhoods. You have the Lithuanian Village. You have the Camp Hillo neighborhood as well, Keith Park. So we want to make sure that there's identity and create more cultural opportunities such as festivals and festivities where people can come outside and enjoy each other.
There you go. Okay. Transparency in office. We hear about it a lot during every election campaign. Not really sure it means much, if anything. What does it mean to you and the office of Mayor Brockton, Jimmy?
So to me, it means inclusion. It means providing information. So it's looking at, again, the Title VI, which mandates that we provide translative and interpretive services. It's also looking at ADA accountability and making sure that if I have an issue, whether it be a hearing, a speech impediment, I can feel welcome to our public meetings. You're mandated to do this as well. You have to have devices that allow those that may have hearing or visual deficiencies to be able to participate, but also making sure you know where the dollars are going. So if you visit the Easton website, you can look at their budget and look at where the financial tracker is. Mm-hmm. I want that for the city of Brockton as well. I wasn't fortunate to grow up with a strong foundation because of, again, being in a disenfranchised community, but I had the drive and the willpower to push forward. And I know that's what the city of Brockton needs as well, too. We have a high population that is living under the federal poverty line that don't have time to inform themselves about government. So I want to be that spokesperson, the liaison that's going to bring people together and work with people from all different sides.
Quick 30-second follow-up. Let's say you get elected and you're in office. If the average citizen in Brockton has a question that they feel that they need to talk to you, mm-hmm. not to one of your aides, mm-hmm. not to some department, right. not to somebody's voicemail, will you call that person back? Will you make a commitment to that?
I would not call them. I'll actually visit them. I like face-to-face interactions, and as a planner, that's what we do. We like to listen, but we also make sure that we listen, not just, you know, to sit there and listen, but to receive that feedback and implement it as well, because we know that if one person affected isn't, there's another person affected as well, and that's what I want to do, and that's why I want to be the elected official that will actually be out there in the community.
Okay. Same question to you, Bob Sullivan. Let's start with the one about transparency in office. We hear it a lot, big buzzword, not sure it really means that much, if anything. What does it mean to you and the office?
I think it means a lot, and I think it only means what the elected officials make it mean. Mm-hmm. And if I'm elected mayor, what it means to me, it's open, inclusive. Everyone is treated with respect. Everyone is treated fairly. Everyone has a voice. Christine, this election is about us, all of us in the city of Brockton. And again, you're electing a mayor to be the voice of the people, all people, throughout the city of Brockton, all 7 wards, all 28 precincts. You know, it has to be about integrity and morals. The days of putting up barriers, those days are gone, rightfully so, long gone. But we learn from those. And at the end of the day, why I'm running for mayor is to make an effective change in the city of Brockton that's gonna really make a difference in people's lives, socially, economically, compassionately. And you know, your issue about an open door policy, that's how I've been elected for 14 years. I give out my business card with my cell number. I call people. I do what Jimmy does. I like to do the face-to-face. It's called, we're in the people business. It's okay. A personal thing. I've done it. If I'm elected mayor, I'm going to continue to do it. That's what it means to be an effective leader of the people.
Okay, so I guess folks can plan on getting calls and visits from whoever the next mayor is. Very impressive. Real quickly here, I'm going to have each one of you ask each other a question, and you want to stick to, again, a minute. So, Jimmy, ask Robert a question, then Robert ask Jimmy.
That'll be the easy one. What, for me, it's, you know, the tangible things. What plans do you feel to, do you think of implementing when we look at the infrastructure and the outlook of the city of Brockton in regards to capital investment and making sure that we look at moving the city forward with development and economic opportunities and inclusion as well?
I mean, I think if we learn anything is that Brockton is a great place to invest in, and we're seeing that as $190 million in the queue for 2019. But I also think that with my background, my MBA, being a small business owner, having a law practice, you know, we have to do it in a smart way, an effective way, but it has to be a long-lasting way. It can't be short overnight. It has to be sustainable, and it has to not just be in the core of the city. We want to enhance that, but we want to build it throughout. We also want to give, you know, different factions within the city of Brockton a chance and an open communication at the table. And what just happened with the BRA, I mean, they put an RFQ out, 15 developers, Jimmy, and you know those 15 developers want to invest in the city of Brockton. It's a great, great opportunity right now. We're seeing it. But again, I've said this before, the train of investment has to continue down the track. And I know it will with me, I know it will with Jimmy, but we need it. It's too important not to make it. So again, I think it's a great question, but I think it's a reality, and it has to be enacted swiftly, quickly, timely, professionally, and all in reaching.
Okay, and Robert, your question for Jimmy.
Jimmy, my question would be this. I like you. I really do. I respect you. My question is this. Before I ran for city council, I volunteered my time 2 years on the planning board, and then I ran the city council to kind of get a feel, and now I'm running for mayor. And I applaud you for kind of going for the top, but why did you decide not to kind of get your feet wet in some other endeavors before running for the CEO of Brockton?
Great question. For me, it was a sense of urgency. I have experience in other, you know, sectors. When you look at regional planning, you look at community development, you look at at-risk youth development as well, working with Department of Youth Services, working with Commonwealth Corporation, working with the Mass Bike Bicycle Coalition as well, working with different planning commissions, the Pioneer Valley Planning Commission, Southern Regional Economic Development Commission as well too, which is in Taunton. So working with elected officials, I've been there at the table. I've worked with the procurement department on Springfield. And again, it was a sense of urgency because I've seen that we did not have a spokesperson that was working with everyone from the community. Granted, the late Mayor Carpenter was able to provide access to a lot of the minority groups, but not to everyone. And again, minoring in ethnic and gender studies, I looked at making sure that we don't just look at race, but we look at class, we look at gender, we look at disabilities, we look at religion as well. Protected classes of the Civil Rights Act, of course, and also making sure they would look at economic development. So the reason for me, again, is to look at the issues that we continue to face, and that's why I ran for mayor.
Thank you very much. Going to go to one quick lightning round question, Kevin Tachi, then go to final statements.
If you could choose one element to add to the city or downtown area, would you choose a movie theater or a big chain restaurant? Pick one.
Jimmy.
Movie theater.
Okay, Robert.
Movie theater.
Yes. Okay, Charlie, do you have a quick question?
What's your favorite place in town, Jimmy?
Okay.
Lightning, home. Lightning. Okay. Home.
Okay.
Home, right on North Warren Avenue.
Robert?
DW Fields Park.
Mm-hmm. Okay. County government, stay or go? Robert?
Stay.
Okay.
Stay.
Jimmy? Okay,
yeah,
let's go to final question. I couldn't do one without asking that question. Now we're going to reverse the order that we started with, and we are going to go to final statements. 1 minute, we're going to start with Robert Sullivan.
Well, again, I want to thank Christine and Charlie and Kevin and WATD and really the Brockton voters. I mean, this is an interesting election coming up a week from tomorrow. Interesting in the fact that you're going to determine the mayor and city council and school committee. My name is Robert Sullivan. I've proudly served 14 years as a city councilor at large. Now I'm taking the step onto the administrative side. I believe having the background, the skills, sets the experience working on budgets, understanding municipal finance, you know, drafting ordinances that impact people's lives, the seniors, the veterans. You know, I'm a Brockton guy, and you know, my two children go to public schools. My third child goes to Trinity Catholic in Brockton. But you know, education is key. I want to work as the mayor and as the school committee chair to make a difference in people's lives. And at the end of the day, I really just take great you know, satisfaction in the city of Brockton, but we need to come together as one inclusive to make it a better community, a safer community, an economic thriving community. I volunteer my time as a basketball coach, a soccer coach, a baseball coach. I'm not a great coach, but you know what? I do it to try to make a difference in the lives. And I'm asking people on November 5th, please consider me Robert Sullivan, number 2 on the ballot, mayor of city of Brockton.
Thank you very much. That was Robert Sullivan. And let's go to closing statement, Jimmy Pereira.
Thank you. I want to thank everyone for this opportunity. Thank you, my opponent, for a great campaign so far. And the reason why I'm running again is a sense of urgency. I ran in 2017 against the late Mayor Carpenter. Doing it again now and making sure that we continue to push the city forward. I've worked with the Regional Planning Agency for over half a decade, working with 17 communities. The experience is there, but also being born and raised in the city of Brockton, seeing the good, the bad, the ugly. The time is now. Time is now for us to be included at the table and make sure we bring everyone to the table. The time is now for us to put Brockton at the table and make sure that we're moving the city up on the platform from where it used to be to even higher as well. I want to make sure that you know that I will be working diligently, responsively, and respectively, because that's what Brockton made me. I am a product of our city. I seen the good, the bad, the ugly, and I am committed to making sure that we again make this city a thriving city as it once was.
Thank you.
And on November 5th, make sure you make the right decision to move the city forward.
Thank you. Good candidates here tonight, Jimmy Pereira, Robert Sullivan, both running for mayor of Brockton here in this WATD Political Forum. It will be up online. You can also hear selected cuts tomorrow morning as well. I want to thank everybody here, Monday Night Talk host Kevin Tachi, our own Charles Mathewson, and our own Amy Leonard for doing wonderful timing. Remember, get out and vote November 5th. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James on 95.9 WATD.
South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
All across the South Shore, you'll find the doctors, nurses, and specialists of Brigham Health. We live here, work here, and care here. For over 25 years, we've been providing exceptional primary and multi-specialty care to the communities of the South Shore. This expert, compassionate care is rooted in the clinical excellence and breakthrough research of Brigham and Women's Hospital, one of the nation's best, according to U.S. News & World Report. Visit our newest location in Pembroke, now accepting new patients. BrighamHealth.org/South Shore. Brigham Health, member partners healthcare.
Over-medicating chronic health issues can be an issue of its own. The time has come for efficient, plant-based remedies formulated specifically for you. Join the millions of other Americans who have found relief thanks to CBD oil. Your CBD store on Route 53 in Hanover has award-winning CBD-based products targeted for use in pain management, anxiety, depression, nausea, insomnia, and seizures. The Farm Bill of 2018 legalized the use of industrialized hemp, making it 100% legal in all 50 states. However, there's a lot of misinformation about CBD.
Before you make a decision, you should learn all the facts. There is absolutely no marijuana in products sold by your CBD store of Hanover. Find a better way to treat your chronic conditions. Visit a trusted resource with award-winning products, your CBD store of Hanover at 1271 Washington Street on Route 53 in Hanover. Your CBD store of Hanover. Help without the high.
South Shore Live is on a quest to uncover the best the South Shore has to offer. Join Stan and the gang tonight from 8 to 10 in partnership with South Shore Magazine. South Shore Live, tonight from 8 to 10 on 95.9 WATD.
All across the South Shore, you'll find the doctors, nurses, and specialists of Brigham Health. We live here, work here, and care here. For over 25 years, we've been providing exceptional primary and multi-specialty care to the communities of the South Shore. This expert, compassionate care is rooted in the clinical excellence and breakthrough research of Brigham and Women's Hospital, one of the nation's best, according to U.S. News & World Report. Visit our newest location in Pembroke, now accepting new patients. BrighamHealth.org/South Shore. Brigham Health, Member Partners Healthcare.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return to live programming here from our political debate. And joining me, as I promised a week ago, she has returned, Victoria Bond, but she's wearing a different hat this time. Last time we talked with her, last time she was in studio as a guest, she did it as the leader of the foodie revolution.
Your commander.
Everybody grab a loaf of bread and fall in line. No. You know, actually, and you know, while we have you, before we jump right into the meat and potatoes of our conversation here.
Oh, you're so good.
Yeah, I know you wanted to, when we had got done with the show last week, it was like a little, I was saying, oh, I'm glad I realized where I fall in line when it comes to being a foodie.
Mm-hmm.
You actually wanted to kind of like, you're like, oh, no, don't feel that way.
Well, no, absolutely. Because you are the one who brought up levels of foodiedom.
I did, yeah.
So I was just
how
trying to give you
I
a
fall?
Guideline as
yeah.
to the, but I think it's, you know, anybody that is discerning at all about what they eat. As
private
opposed to,
foodie at your service. Hey,
thank you. Thank you, private foodie. Relax. At ease.
But as you were saying, go ahead, please.
All right. Well, no, but I was simply saying that anybody who cares about the quality of their food really is a foodie. You know, when I said, you know, if you just eat whatever's put in front of you, I'm talking about, I had a cousin who used to eat, literally, he used to eat whatever was put in front of him.
Oh, my.
I mean, and he would hum while he did it, and he would eat to the point of actually throwing up. So that's somebody that I think...
Oh, it reminds me of, are you a fan of the TV show Friends?
I am, actually.
Do you remember the one where Rachel had made the ladyfingers and...
I do, and she got the recipe wrong.
Yeah, and well, she had the two pages
stuck together. Right.
And Joey's sitting there going...
It was half sweet, half savory.
Yeah. He goes, you know, he's a custard good, peas good, meat good... Jam, good. You get what I'm saying.
Yes, I do.
So, yeah, that would be along the lines of...
It would be, yes. All right. But
yeah, well, you're kind of mixing those two together.
Yes.
As a hodgepodge. But, no, that's... And that's not, folks, that's not what we're here to talk about.
No, it's not.
But I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of...
At least a rabbit hole.
Clear that up. Yeah, we don't want to go down that
squirrel.
Hole.
Squirrel.
We'll never get back.
Okay.
But we're here to, as we teased at the end of last week's program, was talking about reviving... A show, a hit from the 80s, Shirley Valentine. If you could, tell us a little bit about the thought of putting this show together, which is coming up on November 2nd and November 3rd. Going to be at the Reed Community House on Summer Street in Kingston.
Yes. So Shirley Valentine, just to give people a little bit of background, Shirley Valentine by Willie Russell was a big hit in the late 80s. It was on Broadway, and you know, hugely successful, starring Pauline Collins. And they then made it into a film, also starring Pauline Collins. So now it did incredibly well, and it sort of became a beacon for women, because it's a story of a housewife who feels very neglected by her husband and her grown children, who, you know, have moved out of the house. She's kind of lost her place and her role, and you know, she's trying to figure out what happened to the girl she used to be, the woman she used to be. And she has this opportunity to go off to Greece and have an adventure with her friend, and she takes it, and she goes, and she rediscovers herself. And it's very much about self-love and self-care. And a very funny show. So, that's sort of the background on the show itself. I did the show about 8 years ago, with Rogue Theater Company in Taunton, and I love the character of Shirley Valentine, and I love the show itself. It's so witty, it's so funny, and it's just a wonderful message. It's a very uplifting show. It's just, you kind of walk out of the theater feeling elevated. So I was going through some tough stuff last year. I had had a couple of irregular mammograms, some calcifications, and wound up basically having a whole lot of testing done, an ultrasound, and then some more mammograms, and then two stereotactic biopsies, an MRI guided biopsy. Ultimately what wound up happening is that they found a whole lot of atypical cells in my right breast, and in three quadrants of my right breast. And I kind of had to make some decisions about what I was going to do. They didn't find cancer, but they did find atypia. And they found some cells that are indicators of a high risk of cancer. So during one of the tests, which was the MRI guided biopsy, you're on a table face down. The clanging and the banging starts in the machine, and
that's where you had the epiphany.
I was panicked. My brain is going to all the wrong places, and I'm imagining the worst case scenario. And so I started just in my head going, I've got to think of something that's going to just calm me down and make this okay, because otherwise I'm going to freak out. Mm. They're going to have to pull me out of this tube. And into my head pops Shirley Valentine, and I thought, oh, Shirley, that's what I'll think about. When I get through all of this, I'm going to do that show again. Shirley Valentine. And so every test I had from that point forward, I had Shirley with me in my head. And I thought about what I would do with the show once I got through all of this. So November 2nd marks the anniversary of my surgery, in which I had a triple excisional biopsy. They took the three areas in three quadrants of my right breast that were suspicious out, confirmed that there isn't any cancer, confirmed what type of atypia I was dealing with. And, November 2nd is the anniversary. So November 2nd is the first performance of Shirley Valentine. And what I've decided to do is to make it a fundraiser for the Beth Israel Deaconess Plymouth Breast Center, which is where I had that little epiphany about doing the show again, and also for Monarch Projects, which is an organization that I started as a result of everything that went on last year.
What was it like having to go through all of this, is the testing and hearing the results, and then finally deciding to set a date for a surgery? How do you feel that is all empowering you now?
Well, I mean, listen, the whole thing has changed me, permanently, hopefully. I was not taking the best care of myself. I was really overweight. I was not exercising. I was not seeing a doctor regularly. I'd gone a couple of years without a mammogram. You know, it's easy to put off. You know, any woman who's ever had a mammogram knows, you get into that little robe and you go in, they do the images, and then they have you go sit in the waiting room, you know, with your little Johnny on. And then they come in and they say, either you can get dressed or we need to take some more pictures. And any woman who's ever heard the words, we need to take some more pictures, knows the feeling. Your heart drops into your stomach. It's, oh no, because they've seen something. they've seen something they need to take a closer look at. So, you know, I learned a lot last year. I learned an awful lot about facts about breast cancer that I hadn't known before, and about, you know, my risk for breast cancer and things that I need to do. So I started, you know, it changed my life. I've lost 40 pounds. You know, I look at life differently. And that's also why this show is the perfect show, because Shirley, the lessons Shirley learns about loving herself, about self-care, they're the same lessons I learned. So,
and would it be safe to say that, will there be anything tied into what you went, or do you feel that just basically what you went through is going to be what drives you through these two performances?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, it's just a great, Shirley's story is a great story. And it is, you know, I like to say, you know, before we had hashtags, we had Shirley. she was like a beacon of empowerment back in the day. And I, you know, I find it interesting. We're in a place culturally where, you know, we're sort of revisiting past behaviors. We're revisiting women's sort of position and experiences that women have had. We should revisit this voice too, because she has a lot to say, and it's still important, and it's still salient, and it still hits home. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a perfect time for her to come back, Shirley. You know, she's funny, she's witty, and she manages to find her power without robbing anyone else of theirs.
And folks will be able to kind of see this roller coaster ride of emotions and, mm-hmm. and what Shirley's going through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's just, it's a very freeing kind of a show. It really is.
I have to ask is,
yeah.
I know that you have a show program. Mm. And I believe that there's going to be a couple of baskets. Are there going to be a couple of baskets that are going to be part of the performance? I don't know if they're going to be part of a silent auction or what.
So basically what we're doing is, I have to say, I want to just say a quick thank you to the town of Kingston, because they have been remarkably generous with me. You know, I was looking around for a space. I knew I wanted to do the show, and I'm kind of trying to figure out where am I going to do it. And, you know, it's just a promise I made to myself, so I need to keep it, right? So, and I contacted Beth Israel, Deaconess Plymouth, and I said, you know, I want to do this as a fundraiser for the Press Center, and, you know, they're on board and they're happy, and I'm looking around for a venue, and Kingston came through in aces and spades for me. You know, I went to the Reed Center, and it is a beautiful auditorium with a beautiful stage, and, you know, Kingston Recreation Commission met with me and generously donated the space to me. So, you know, that was a huge, I couldn't believe that it was so generous of them. So, yeah, and then their Bartending Service of New England, Billy Fuller over at the Bartending Service of New England, was good enough to, you know, donate. He said, I will, you know, have a beer and wine bar, a cash beer and wine bar available. He's not charging me for setting that up or anything. He's just donating his services to me for that, so people can buy a glass of, you know, beer or a glass of wine while they watch the show. And then there are some other businesses that have been kind enough to donate items. So there's going to be two baskets per performance, one wine basket and one wellness basket.
Nice.
So yeah, the wine basket is because Shirley's big dream in the play is to go and have a drink a glass of wine in a country where the grape is grown. So we thought a wine basket would be appropriate. So we'll raffle off one wine basket, and then the wellness basket are things that, you know, they're about taking care of yourself. You know, we've got somebody who's donated some acupuncture, you know, there's a, you know, hair care products, there's services, a fitness club, you know, Plymouth Fitness has donated a gift card, you know, so they're things that are about, you know, taking good care of yourself, being well. So there'll be one of each of those baskets at each performance. So it's just an additional way to raise some additional dollars. And the way that I've structured this, you know, plays are expensive to put on. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't realize. You know, this play is costing about $3,500 for two nights. $3,500. You know, it is what it is. So I am trying to make sure all the expenses for the play are paid for by the time we open, so that all the ticket revenue and all the raffle revenue go to the Beth Israel Deaconess Plymouth Breast Center and yep. Monarch Projects. And Monarch Projects is a Chapter 180 not-for-profit, and what it focuses on is empowering women. So they're both good causes.
You are going to be the featured performer, but I'm sure you're not doing this alone. Who is assisting you with designing and directing this?
Thank you. John Beausoleil from Rogue Theater. Rogue Theater Company, is... producing, co-producing the project, and John Beausoleil is directing and designing the set. And Donald Dubois, I have to mention, because he is doing all the set construction.
Don's a great guy, yep.
And he's the designer of The Rock, and he's doing. And Adam Bond is helping out. Adam Bond is helping out. Rogue Theater Company, obviously. It's been a wonderful experience. People have really stepped up and been incredibly generous with their time.
How important is the show program? Because my understanding is that it's going to be filled with facts about breast cancer.
Yes. So the program is how I'm paying for the show ahead of time, right? So I've got a lot of businesses that have been kind enough to sponsor. When I decided to do this, it wasn't just, I could have said, well, I'll just do the show because I made my promise to myself and that's that. But I wanted it to also, raise breast cancer awareness. I learned a lot, about breast cancer and the risks for it. So I wanted to include breast cancer facts in the program. And businesses, can sponsor a fact for $200. They'll, as you flip through the program and read about my bio or John's bio or about Donald who built The Rock, all of that information, where the show takes place and that stuff, you also will be leafing through facts about breast cancer. And there are also inspirational pages that people could purchase, which are, you can purchase an individual page for $150, which is, people have bought to say, you've got this, Wendy, we're thinking of you, you can beat this, or, remembering someone who's passed, or you can do an inspirational page for $100. And that inspirational page is just just an inspirational message, to take with you. So,
again, we're speaking with Victoria Bond, as she's going to be starring in this fantastic production called Shirley Valentine. This is by Willie Russell. And this is going to be taking place Saturday, November 2nd at 7 p.m., Sunday, November 3rd at 6 p.m. at the Reed Community House, 33A Summer Street in Kingston. Doors will open a half hour before curtain. There'll be beer and wine, cash bar available. Show running time is about 90 minutes. All tickets are about $25. Go to the website, ShirleyTickets.com. It's that easy. And I believe that you would like to give a little bit of an appetizer to the show.
Yes.
If you will.
Absolutely.
Right, so here she is, Victoria Bond with Shirley Valentine.
They say, don't they? They say that once you've reached your 40s, life gets a bit jaded and you start to believe that the only good things are things in the past. Well, I must have been an early developer. I felt like that at 25. I mean, I'm not saying he's bad, my fella. He's just no bleeding good. Mind you, I think most of them are the same, aren't they? I mean, they're lovely at first. No, when they're caught in you. Before you've had the horizontal party with them. Oh, they're marvelous then. They'll do anything for you. Nothing's too much trouble. But the very minute after they've had you, their behavior starts to change. It's like that advert, isn't it? I was watching it the other night. Cadbury's Milk Tray Man. Oh, he's marvelous, isn't he? You see him, he dives off a 1,000-foot cliff and swims across 2 miles of water just to drop off a box of Cadbury chocolates. And you learn from that the lady loves Milk Tray and that the lady's been keeping her legs firmly closed. Because if he'd had his way with her, he wouldn't go there by diving off a 1,000-foot cliff and swimming through a raging torrent. He'd go by bus, and there'd be no chocolates. And if she mentioned the chocolates that he used to bring, he'd say, "Oh, no, babe, I've stopped bringing your chocolates because you're putting a bit too much weight on." If women didn't hold back a bit, Cadbury could go out of business.
Ever feel like you're married to Kim Jong-un? Ever consider why some animals eat their young? Are the walls the only thing that listen to you? Then you need to meet Shirley. And you just got a little sample from Victoria Bond. Shirley Valentine, curtain going up Saturday, November 2nd at 7 p.m. Be sure to get your tickets, shirleytickets.com. Fantastic.
Thank you.
You so effortlessly find your way into a character. How is it to get in, to be able to get into a character like that?
You know what? I relate to Shirley in so many ways. I would say every woman does, but that's such a trap. It's not true. Every person does. Sure. Shirley's just a beautifully human individual, and she's not afraid to put her feelings out there. And that's sort of what makes her so great. She's so lonely, she talks to the wall. You know, that's how the show starts. She comes in, and the audience is the wall. And she spends her day talking to the wall. And you just learn all about all of the people in her life, and you go on this fabulous adventure with her. And it's just, as I said before, I love Shirley. I think it's probably my favorite character that I've ever played. She's funny and she's real.
And how, you know, you're somebody who's used to working with a group of actors or being the only one on stage. What is it like to be the only person? It's because this is you. You're carrying the show.
Yeah, Shirley Valentine, the stage play itself is a one-woman show. Yeah. She becomes all of these other characters. And it's a huge challenge in that regard. And you do, you know, there are sections of the play where I'm having sort of conversations with myself. But it can be very intimidating. And it is, there's a part of me, I'm not going to lie, who's like, why did I say I would do this? I could just sit home and watch TV instead. But, you know, it's incredibly rewarding.
I think you see the importance to the message.
Oh, for sure. I mean, listen, this is a message that every one of us can relate to. I mean, it really, when it's all said and done, this is about loving your life. Not just living your life, but loving your life. I defy anyone to come to this show and not laugh to almost the point of tears and to not walk out feeling lifted.
Are you imploring anybody to do donations that they want? Let's say if they can't come, if they wanted to donate.
That would be fantastic. I mean, look, the more, as I said, the ticket monies and the raffle monies are sort of that's it. That's the kit and caboodle. Unless I can not only exceed my production costs, if people want to make donations in addition to, then it will all go to the stated charities. So that would be fantastic. They can make a check out to Rogue Theater Company, which is a 501c3 not-for-profit theater company, they can mail the check to 1 North Main Street in Middleborough. All the information is on shirleytickets.com. There's also another website, which is monarchprojects.org. Where you can get information on both of those websites. So,
any stone that we have not turned over in regards to our conversation here this evening?
You know what? I think we've turned every stone over, Kevin. I think we have. I do.
Well, I say this all in the right context here. Break a leg.
Thank you.
That's just it for folks at home going, is he wishing her ill will? No, that's it's an actor thing. You know,
it is. Do you know where that comes from?
I did hear the reference, but I've since forgotten. But I know that there's an
you're never supposed to. Yeah, you're supposed to always say break a leg. And actors are very superstitious people. But it comes from the fact that they used to, back in the day, they would throw coins onto the stage and the actor would break their leg. In other words, bend at the knee to pick up the coins. Yeah, so if you break a leg, it means you've had a great show and it's been successful. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. See, we got a definition to the term.
There you go.
So I feel that the evening has
totally been complete.
Totally complete.
I just knew I could help you, Kevin, and I'm so happy that I was.
And I love how you're able to have the different, you're able to kind of get into character. Whether it's a brogue, am I saying that right? Is it a brogue or what is it actually?
No, Shirley Valentine's actually Liverpudlian. She's from Liverpool.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's totally... It's
but
a,
you're
a
able
different.
To kind of... Because you have... There are different accents that you are able
there
to...
there are, yes. And it's one of those things... I love accents and I love playing with accents. But yeah, the Liverpool accent is very... It is. It's tough and it is specific. And, you know, like this country, and we have all different types of accents here, they've got all different
cultural
types of accents.
Cultural dialects, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So...
Well, fantastic. Well, thank you again for coming
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I hope people will come and see the show because they will not regret it.
Again,
it's the best $25 you can spend.
Absolutely. A fundraiser for a great cause. Again, ShirleyTickets.com for Shirley Valentine. If you get a chance to actually see, I know you're only hearing her tonight, but it's coming up next Saturday and Sunday.
Yes.
Please get tickets. And if you do, tell the folks at the door that you heard it here.
And the one thing I will say is the show only runs about an hour and 45 minutes. So it's not, you know, I know the Sunday show is at 6 o'clock. So people will be out the door by 8.
Hey, you'll be back home for 60 minutes.
You got it.
All right. My guest, I want to thank you very much, Victoria Bond, for being here.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you for tuning in, as you do every week until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great evening. You've been listening to Monday Night Talk. We'll be right back.